Enterprise. Cosmic Cubby's arrived. 12 transmission steel buys the seats where science, myth, and magic meet. From 61 into the 70, exponential growth only in humanity. I'm a vagabond.
It's incredible.
I'm a vagabond. I'm a vagabond.
Stellar. Fantastic.
I'm a vagabond.
Oh, it's uncanny.
Hey there, and welcome to Marvel by the Month, the podcast that takes you through the history of Marvel Comics one month at a time. In this episode, that month is April 1970. My name is Brian Stratton.
Mine is Rob Milne.
And I'm Jamie Wenger.
Fellas, we got to cut right to the chase here. This is a momentous episode for Marvel by the Month. I don't think it is overstating things to say that this is the episode that the entire show has been leading up to. I have mentioned several times on the show that my favorite podcast of all time is the Flophouse and the Maximum Fun Network. And we have been fortunate enough to get two of the hosts to join us for previous episodes. We had Elliot Kalin on our July 1967 and September 1969 episodes. We had Dan McCoy for our August 1968 episode. But gentlemen, we have done it. We have secured the final gem for our Flopfinity gauntlet.
The Flopfinity.
Yes.
This is not a dream, not a hoax, not an imaginary story. The handsomest man in podcasting, Stuart Wellington, is here with us tonight on Marvel by the Month. Hey, Stu.
Hey, it's me, Stuart Wellington. You tried the rest. You have the best. It's me. Thanks so much for having me. I'm happy to be here. I'm glad that you picked me last. I mean... you know, it's fine.
Well, you know, we had to build to something. And
that's true. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And you know, to peel back the curtain, you've been a tricky man to get a hold of. I mean, you, unlike those other guys, you have a real job.
that's very true.
Yes.
It's not that it's hard to get a hold of me, but it's hard for me to commit to things like doing a podcast.
Right. Uh-huh. Yeah.
It's only recently. So for listeners at home who are like, who's this annoying guest? Well, I also, in addition to being a podcaster, I run a couple of bars, and I'm very active in the running of one of those. And during the pandemic and then since the pandemic, it has been difficult to make sure that it's staffed appropriately. And only recently have we hired enough staff and have things settled down enough that I've been able to, you know, commit to a weekend or a weeknight free to talk about Marvel Comics.
Hooray.
With some people.
Yeah. Excellent. And I feel like we should just get a plug in for that bar right up front.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I'm not doing my job. Thank you for doing my job for me. It's that bar in question is Hinterlands Bar in Sunset Park, Brooklyn. Please come visit. And I also own a bar called Minnie's Bar in Sunset Park.
Nice.
Nice.
And I've been to Hinterlands. I haven't been to Minnie's yet, but I definitely recommend Hinterlands. I definitely recommend, you'll probably have to anyway, but definitely visit the bathroom of Hinterlands, which is wallpapered with Warhammer, pages from Warhammer rule
books. Oh, cool.
So,
true, yeah.
It's fantastic.
My, it was, that fulfilled two roles, which was one, it gave me an opportunity to look at those pages more often. and two, it helped me clear out some shelves where my wife was annoyed that I had so many old Warhammer books that I was not doing anything with. So I ripped the page. Some people were like, you could have just photocopied those and put up the photocopies. No, not me. OG pages.
Fantastic. Well, again, thank you so much for joining us, Stuart. I think this, now that we've had all three hosts of the Flophouse, I think this puts us in some pretty rarefied company. I can't think of a lot of other shows that that have had all three of you on. Blank Check, you've done a crossover with them.
Yeah. That's a high stakes podcast.
I know those guys are real professionals.
I feel like we've all been on Jordan Jesse Go,
mm-hmm.
and I think we were all on Dan's brother's podcast.
There you go. So we're up there with Dan's brother. This is fantastic.
Yeah, finally.
Yeah. Stu, I know from listening to the Flap House that you are a pretty serious comics fan, including but not limited to Marvel Comics. Mm-hmm. What's the origin story of your comics fandom? Do you remember the first comics that you read?
Yeah, absolutely. The first comics I read, I can't tell you. Mm-hmm. I mean, like comic strips and stuff like that. Real quick. Can I swear on this podcast?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's encouraged.
Thank
in
you
fact.
For asking the
to fulfill the role
questions.
Of every podcast guest. I don't remember what got me into comics, but I always liked comics. The first Marvel comic that I remember buying is the one where the Punisher goes to the ninja training camp, penciled by Eric Larson.
Yeah,
that was super cool. I was really into that arc. And then I think I jumped over from, you know, I followed Eric Larson to Amazing Spider-Man and mm-hmm. then Spider-Man. And I think right around that time, Jim Lee was on X-Men, Uncanny X-Men. And that I got super into that and I went back probably to about as far, basically to whenever Silvestri started penciling Uncanny X-Men, and that was like my jam. That was my sweet spot. Moved over to Image, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. I think you're singing Jamie's song here.
Yeah, X-Boy, mm-hmm. born and raised.
Yeah. Yep.
So there's an old saw about, like, you know, the actual golden age of comics is whatever they were publishing when you were 12 or 13 years old.
Uh-huh.
Is that basically track for you?
Yeah. I think that's probably right. I mean, that's certainly for like Marvel comics, for superhero stuff. It's like whatever album you hear first by a band is the one you like the best.
Exactly.
Sure.
Yep. Well, without getting into the particulars of this week's issues yet, had you read any of these issues before?
No.
There's
a chance I read the Spider-Man.
There's always a chance you might have read a Spider-Man. Yeah, they all kind of blend together, and they've all been reprinted a million times.
But the others were totally new to me, and that particularly, I never read much Fantastic Four or Daredevil.
Oh,
Daredevil's one that I'm not super familiar with, mm-hmm. and that was a fun issue. I liked it.
Nice. Well, we're very excited to talk with you about the Marvel Comics of April 1970 in just a little bit. Before we do that, as we always do, we're going to provide a little historical context by talking about what else was happening in April of 1970. Jamie, would you mind kicking us off?
Sure. On April 1st, 1970, U.S. President Richard M. Nixon signed the Public Health Cigarette Smoking Act into law, banning cigarette, television, and radio advertisements in the United States, effective January 2nd, 1971. The one big last day on January 1st was permitted by Congress to allow television networks to get tobacco revenue for the college football bowl game of New Year's Day. Oh, boy.
Wow. Yep. On the 4th of April, the disposal of the remains of Adolf Hitler was carried out at the Soviet Union's military base in Magdeburg, East Germany. Mm. Only the commander of the base was aware that the burnt skeletons of Hitler, Eva Braun, General Hans Krebs, Joseph Goebbels, Magda Goebbels, and the Goebbels' children had been interred there.
Whoa.
Hitler's skull had been sent to Moscow in 1945, where it was placed in the state archives in Moscow. That sounds like the first four pages of a Hellboy story.
Yes. Yeah. or some like late Captain America in the mid-90s, I think.
Yeah.
Like, you know. Yeah, somehow the cosmic cube gets a hold of Hitler's skull, and there we go. Yeah.
Do they have other skulls, or is it just Hitler's?
I don't know.
Is it like an archive of skulls?
You have to assume it's filled with skulls.
Just wall to wall, as far as the eye can see.
It's like a Frazetta painting.
Arguably, Hitler's would have some kind of pride of place.
Sure, yeah, he gets a plaque or whatever.
Super baddie.
Right. Yeah,
but, like, they gotta have, other, like, the various czars and czarinas, et cetera, et cetera.
Sure.
For sure.
Hopefully there's a throne of skulls, you know. Well, I mean, sure. I don't know. I'm going to go off into heavy metal land now, but yeah.
So yeah, to prevent the site of the grave from becoming a shrine for neo-Nazis, KGB director Yuri Andropov ordered that the grave's contents be crushed, burned, and scattered. The process was completed the next day at Schoenbeck, and what was left over was dumped into the Elbe River.
Wow. So also like a Hellboy, like they had to make sure the remains were scattered so that they couldn't reform into vampire beasts or something.
Right. Well, on the downside, now the whole Elbe River is like actually part Hitler.
Yeah, I was gonna say you've got a bunch of like schools of neo-Nazi fish swimming around. Yeah.
Cursed.
So you've got a river golem.
On the 5th of April, in order to prevent the court-ordered busing of students to achieve racial desegregation, Florida's Governor Claude Kirk issued an executive order appointing himself as the school superintendent of Manatee County and suspending Superintendent Jack Davidson and the rest of the school board. Whoa. Kirk reversed himself the following Sunday after Judge Krentzman ruled that he was in contempt of court and assessed a fine of $10,000 per day, equivalent to more than $66,500 a day 50 years later, to be paid personally by Governor Kirk for every day that he interfered with the court's orders.
Yep. Whoa.
Wow.
Just last defender of the lost cause.
Yep.
Then in April 7th, 1970, Major League Baseball returned to Milwaukee. As the Milwaukee Brewers played their first game in Milwaukee County Stadium.
And of course, the Milwaukee Brewers just prior to that, a week prior, were known as the...
Oh, the Raving Castanets.
The Seattle Pilots.
Oh, I was so close.
Seattle, like, airplane pilots?
Yep. It was okay. The Jet City.
Whoa.
Oh, that makes sense. That's cool.
Milwaukee's previous major team, the Braves, had played their final game on September 12th, 1965, before relocating to Atlanta. And the Brewers lost to the California Angels 12-0.
Also on the 7th, the 42nd Annual Academy Awards took place on that evening. Midnight Cowboy became the first and to date the only X-rated film to receive the Oscar for Best Picture.
Sweet.
And John Wayne received his first and only Oscar for Best Actor for his performance as Rooster Cogburn in True Grit.
Oh, nice.
In Beatles by the Month news on the 10th of April, with the page one headline, Paul Quits the Beatles,
dun, dun, dun.
Britain's national daily tabloid newspaper, The Daily Mirror, broke the story that Paul McCartney was leaving the Beatles. He was technically like the third person to quit the Beatles, but,
but he was the only one. That
he was
mattered.
The one that, he wasn't the one who was talked back. Ringo, he was the fourth. Ringo had quit. We talked about Ringo quitting and coming back a few years ago. So he
was the last.
He's the last Beatle to quit during this time. But that really, he was the Beatle that was holding it together. Right. So McCartney's parting of ways with John Lennon and bandmates George Harrison and Ringo Starr effectively brought a permanent end to the most popular rock musician group in history. Oof. McCartney issued a press release later in the day in conjunction with promotional copies of his first album as a solo artist, McCartney. Mm. So he knows how to use the press well.
Yeah.
Have you, any of you guys watched the new Beatles?
No, I'm going to try to talk Barb into starting it tonight because dying to. I was listening to guys on the, you know, XM Beatles channel talking about the show on my way over here.
Oh, wow.
Because that's what I do with my free time.
I imagine the guys on the XM Beatles channel, when they heard that documentary were coming out, were like, hell yeah, we got hours of content, baby.
Yeah,
it's going to take months. Us through the end of the year.
I mean, the footage I've seen looks a little yassified for my taste, but it's okay. Like, it looks, I mean, I'm sure it's cool.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to just the sort of creative management aspect of what you'll see in that time.
Huh.
Like, people trying to keep shit on the rails.
It is sort of, I was asking a friend who had seen it recently, is like, so is this basically like the Beatles version of Some Kind of Monster? And they're like, yeah, kind of.
Well, only more polite.
Yes, no one goes to rehab. No one shouts at anyone.
No one is Lars.
No one is Lars. Yeah, that right there.
And there's, I mean, the idea of like guys just sitting around without cell phones, smoking cigarettes, like that sounds watchable.
yeah, watch that. Right,
it's Mad Men all over again.
On April 11th, 1970, Apollo 13, carrying astronauts Jim Lowell, Jack Swigert, and Fred Hayes, was launched from Cape Kennedy, which, as we all know, Magneto took over in X-Men 1, with plans to make the third crewed landing on the moon. 2 days later, the mission control team at the Manned Spacecraft Center in Houston, Texas, received word from Apollo 13 crew that an oxygen tank in the command module had exploded and that electrical power was gradually dropping, an event that led to an abort of the planned lunar landing. Bummer. The crew transferred to the lunar module, and NASA began new calculations for a course that could swing the spacecraft around the moon and then bring the command module and lunar module back to Earth. On April 17th, Apollo 13 splashed down safely in the South Pacific Ocean near American Samoa and was recovered by the amphibious assault ship USS Iwo Jima.
Yeah.
It's crazy that they were doing that with technology that, like, it. That I don't even own any technology as bad as what they were using to do that.
Yeah. I think I have a guitar amp that's probably as crappy as that.
Yeah. My child's toys probably are more advanced technologically. Yeah.
I think that would make a phenomenal movie. I think someone should make that movie.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's just off the dome.
Folks.
Wow. Yep. He's a genius.
He really is.
Let's see. April 19th was a big day for comics. That was the day that Green Lantern issue number 76 came out. Dennis O'Neill and Neil Adams became the creative team, and they rechristened the title as Green Lantern, Green Arrow. Hmm. And that issue began a long story arc in which the characters undertook a social commentary journey across America.
Some of the best DC stuff. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
My dad had a few of those.
Yeah.
I probably have read a small handful.
Very worthwhile stuff.
Huh.
And then on the same day, 4 days after publishing the first issue of the underground comics magazine Slow Death, Ron Turner founded the iconic counterculture publishing house Last Gasp in San Francisco. And then again, on the same day, Russell Meyer's Broomhilda made its debut in the comics pages of 69 newspapers across the country.
Whoa.
Nice.
I used to love that when I was a kid.
We're not going to make it out of a news without talking about Vietnam.
Probably
so
not.
So it's on the 20th of April, 1970, U.S. President Milhouse Nixon announced that he would order the withdrawal of 150,000 American troops from South Vietnam over the next 12 months as part of the process of turning conduct of the Vietnam War over to the South Vietnamese people. 10 days after declaring that, Nixon reversed the decision and announced that troop strength would not be decreased and that the war would expand into Cambodia. Well, so, yeah, false alarm. It's getting worse.
I guess that's one way to celebrate Hitler's birthday.
Jeez.
That's and also my wife's.
Oh, no. That's my anniversary.
And Ross's anniversary.
Oh. I mean, we were more making a 420 joke, but okay, here we are. Yeah.
On April 26, 1970, Company, a Broadway musical with music and lyrics by Stephen Sondheim, began the first of 706 performances at the Alvin Theater. Oh, man. Yeah. So very saddened by his loss. He's a true genius. That show would win 6 Tony Awards, including Best Musical, Best Music, and Best Lyrics. I don't know that show at all.
Yeah. Well, there you go. You know what to be watching this weekend.
Exactly.
Yeah. I have my homework. Get back. and then that, if I have time.
Well, that's some of what was going on in the world in April 1970. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the Marvel Comics of April 1970 right here on Marvel by the Month. Hey, everyone. Thanks for listening to this episode of Marvel by the Month. A special thanks to those of you who support us at patreon.com/Marvel by the Month and keep us a 100% listener-supported podcast. If you're not already a Patreon supporter, it's just $4 a month, and we do our best to make it worth your while.
If you're a fan of Stuart Wellington, and who isn't, then supporting us for just $4 a month at patreon.com/Marvel by the Month gives you access to an extended version of this episode with a bunch of extra material that didn't make it into the public version. We've also got extended versions of just about every guest episode from this season on that feed.
And this season's guest list has been incredible. Mike Allred, Chelsea Kane, Douglas Woke, Tom Brevoort, Paul Copperberg, Jordan Morris, Clint McElroy, and so many others.
Yeah, this is something like the 26th subscriber-exclusive episode on the bonus feed. We add at least two more every month. That means that your subscription only becomes more valuable over time. That is math. That is science.
And also, whenever Rick Jones performs a new song in the comics we read, for some reason, I record a version of it. Is that a selling point? I have no idea. It's bad and it's hilarious. So there you go.
I mean, honestly, it's the only way I'd ever believe that Rick Jones could be a rock star.
Yes. And hey, you will be a rock star to us if you subscribe to Marvel by the Month on Patreon today. Sign up at patreon.com/Marvel by the Month to instantly get access to all of our past, present, and future subscriber exclusive content.
Do it.
Welcome back to Marvel by the Month. Let's talk about Daredevil number 65, The Killing of Brother Brimstone. This is by Roy Thomas, art by Gene Colan, and Sid Shore's doing the finishes. Brian, before we get started, can you remind us what's been going on in the last few issues of Daredevil?
Oh, yes, boy. Please.
Okay, yeah. So I feel like we need some context here. Daredevil revealed his secret identity to Karen Page because he wanted to marry her.
At the grave of her father.
At the grave of her father, who he failed to save.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Smooth.
Yep. Yeah. So he's like, hey, she's emotionally vulnerable.
Get her.
This is my moment. And then he asked her to marry him several times. And she kept saying, I'm not going to marry you if you're going to keep daredeviling around, because I don't want to be worried that you're just not going to come home.
And she knows that Matt Murdock is Daredevil.
Yes.
At this point. He's not like proposing in costume or something.
No, exactly.
Yeah. And it's the exception to most of these situations.
Right.
Yeah.
So, and so finally, she decides she's had enough, and she leaves and she moves to LA. And she does not let him know where she's going. She doesn't give him any contact information. She's staying with a college friend at this point, who she is instructed to lie to Matt Murdock.
How does he find out that she went to L.A.?
Oh, right. Yeah.
I'm glad you asked.
He breaks into her New York apartment and looks for clues about where she could have gone, and winds up doing the rubbing the notepad for the faint impressions of an address or a phone number. And yeah, that's how he puts it all together. So,
yeah.
It doesn't get less cringy.
No,
let's do it. I liked watching Stu's face there. So this issue begins with Karen being chased through some dense fog on a city street by Brother Brimstone.
It's like something out of an Italian movie or comic right there. Right? It's fog, close-ups on the eyes, Dario Argento stuff.
Yeah, it's great. It's great Gene Colan stuff. Mm-hmm. So it's like a night gallery kind of scene. So there's a lot of dramatic narration stepping us through this scene. And then as Karen gets caught in a stranglehold by Brother Brimstone, we turn the page to someone yelling cut. So she's gonna be okay.
Relief.
Brother Brimstone is just a character on a gothic soap opera called Strange Secrets, on which Karen has landed a part.
So this is meant to be like a Dark Shadows type of show, I think.
Very much, but yeah. I've got a little more thinking on this as we go.
Ooh, okay.
It's like 1 inch more thinking. I have a one more thought.
Okay.
So Karen's friend Sally is an assistant director and, impressed with Karen's acting skills, got her, you know, hooked up with this job. And now to the actually creepy part. Daredevil is breaking into Sally's apartment to look for clues to Karen's whereabouts. Sally told Matt that Karen wasn't there when he called her on the phone after he flew to LA. So he finds notes.
Well, he says as he's entering, I don't like entering other people's apartments while they're gone, but us guys in love do crazy things.
As he swings through the window. Yeah,
don't lump me into this.
Yeah, right.
We're not buddies.
Oh, man. So while he's rifling through some stranger's apartment, he finds notes in Karen's handwriting to her mom, letting her mom know where she is. He goes through Karen's clothes, so he recognizes them. Yikes.
Yep.
And an agenda for both Sally and Karen, revealing their parts in the TV show and where they'll be. So that's pretty handy. He's like, yeah, done.
Yeah.
Matt locked.
Now I'll just use this itinerary to follow their every step.
Yeah.
Yep.
Just get stalkery and stalkery. So back at the shoot, they need to do retakes because this weird, creepy hair and makeup guy got in the shot.
Was he creepy? I felt a little bad for him.
Well, they said more about how he, you know, like,
oh, he had a
comes
girl
on to every girl who's on the set and ruins a bunch of shots. He's a guy who works on a TV set and can't stay out of the camera shot.
Yeah.
That's not a good guy to all have right. around.
Stand corrected.
But it sounds like he's good at, you know, what he does.
Yeah,
so
his posture always looks so apologetic.
So this, we also have Karen meeting Vince Sterling, the star of the show, who is she mentions a good magician. And I think that's like Stephen Strange, who I'm guessing Roy cannot let go of since that has been canceled. And we've seen Dr. Strange appear in a couple. This is also called Strange Secrets is the name of the show.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah,
he just can't quit him.
A bunch of obsessed men in this, on different layers.
Yeah, it's very meta.
Yeah. And so then it gets funnier. Vince asks Karen out on a Coke date.
I wrote that down too.
Karen likes a party.
Yeah. She's in LA.
Man, there's a snowstorm in LA.
Hey, 70s. But before retakes or the Coke date can happen, they are interrupted by a tirade from the actor who plays Brother Brimstone named Ross Archer. And it's weird how everybody's name is constantly said in this book.
Yes. They're really leaning into that. Were they proud of them? Or are
I
they
don't know.
Sure
it's
not
like
confused?
they're actors, so we must say their name. He's learned,
you know how actors are. If you don't say their names,
they get real upset.
Yep.
They can't come through the mirror. Right. So he's learned that he is being killed off in the show, and he's reading like the next show's script. He has a full fit that takes several people to pull him off of the writer. Mm-hmm. This is about the third time also when this is happening that people comment on how strong he is.
He's got a real Mr. Hyde thing going.
He does. Yeah. Looks the part.
Who is exactly what I thought was happening when this book started was Mr. Hyde showed up. Archer plans revenge on everyone, and then they use a stand-in to get the retakes done. Then Karen and Sterling... They chat, but Karen turns down the Coke date and heads off for home. You know, after that big fight, it just seems like she's already up.
She's already keyed up.
She's looking.
Can't
for
take it any higher right now. So she heads for home in now a real fog in LA. She runs into Archer, who is Brimstone, attacking his stand-in on the street. And as they struggle, Karen runs off and Brimstone follows with a plan of silencing her. It looks like he kills the guy. He like takes the stand in and bashes his head against the wall. And then he's like, I'm off to kill the witness. Here we go. before he gets to her, the real stalker shows up. Daredevil swings and fights with Brimstone
Hooray?
For four pages.
Good,
luckily, he's been watching everything she does and smelling her hair when she's not looking.
Like, what's the lesson here?
He swings in and seriously, four pages of fighting with Brimstone. And the main takeaway is Brimstone is strong and fast. Or Archer, whatever we want to call him.
But these are pretty beautiful little fight scenes. Like the pages are great. There's a lot of variety in the positioning, the figures, there's a lot of motion. It's great.
Yeah. The panel layouts too. This is great Gene Colan stuff all around. If he's not doing something weird and creepy, he can do action.
Yeah, the perspectives are used particularly well in this one.
Yeah, and if you like this stuff, like once we start getting into a little later in the decade, reading like Tomb of Dracula, like that's vintage Gene Colan.
Yeah, I'm very looking forward to that. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
Tomb of Dracula.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't spend a lot of time there, or spends a lot of time there.
Yeah, about 12 hours a day, I guess.
I got it. Vampires.
It's a vampire joke. So. So anyway, they fight beautifully, and then Karen leads Daredevil back once Daredevil vanquishes Archer, or he runs. Brimstone hits him in the back of the head real hard and runs off.
Yeah.
So he's that actor, strong and fast.
This actor beats up a superhero.
Then Karen leads the DD back to the injured stand-in guy.
Can I point out that Karen calls him Matt out of concern for him, and he's like, lady, somebody could have heard you. Why do you use my real name? Like, what?
Yeah.
You just showed up. You're stalking her. Yeah. What the fuck?
Yeah. Well, and then doing is stalking you. You don't have to use my real name.
Yeah. And then he takes it one step further. And like at the very end of page 15, he says, I paid a visit to your girlfriend's pad and learned you were both at the TV studio near here. So I've been skulking about in the area hoping to find you after work. And if I may be immodest for a moment, you're lucky I did.
Oh my gosh.
And what? She just lets that go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's used to Matt's wacky stuff.
Oh man.
There's not really a context where you use skulking and you're the hero, right?
No, yeah. I don't think you can innocently skulk.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Maybe he said it cute. So anyway, so they've gone back, they check on the stand-in and they get him help. She seems totally unfazed, but as we were talking, by the straight up psycho stalking that Matt has pulled. And then Karen shows up to work the next day and she finds out that the studio has paid to get Archer, Brother Brimstone, out of jail to film his last episode, where he will strangle her character in her hospital bed.
Yep.
I would maybe not go around. I wouldn't go with that.
Union rule? I don't know a ton about unions.
I mean, she can't be SAG at this point.
Not.
She doesn't have the hours.
Right.
So. That's like Tarantino and Kill Bill level of endangerment. Like,
yeah.
I don't think that's cool.
Yeah.
Let's get the guy out of jail. He just had a couple tantrums and tried to kill some people.
He's a good guy.
You're right, right. In fact, this is what he's good at. He's going to be strangling you. It's going to be so real. So there are cops on the set.
He just loves the part so much, you know?
he's perfect for the role.
He's too committed to his craft. Yeah, that's his only problem. He's
Johnny Depping all over the place.
So the only safety precaution is there are cops on the set. So that still, you know, does not sound smart. But of course, good old Daredevil is skulking and lurking around the set in the rafters.
Oh, God. I mean, what else is he going to do? He's in L.A., right?
Like, yeah. He almost beat up some hippies on a last issue because they were fighting over a dog and he thought it was a lady.
Yeah. It's not his town. You know, yeah, like he's a dark, gritty
New Yorker.
Yeah. Very small section of town in New York.
Right, right.
He does move to San Francisco at one point, which also doesn't seem like a great
fit. Yeah, I don't see
we'll
that
get
working
there.
Out.
Yeah.
So Dee Dee is lurking, but then we find out that Brimstone is double lurking above him in further rafters and about to throw someone to their death. Daredevil doesn't have time to save the falling person, but he thinks they're dead already. I love this whole thinking. So he jumps up to fight the guy. Dead guy's falling by, and he's like, I'm pretty sure it's dead. And but if I'm not, I'm going to be bummed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or if I'm not right. So Brimstone gets away again, but did he? Because the strangled and dead guy on the ground turns out to be Ross Archer, Brother Brimstone.
Oh. Dun, dun, dun.
What a twist.
Wow. This is two cliffhangers.
Based on the other characters that we've seen, I wouldn't be surprised if this Brother Brimstone is an android or possibly Van Lunt. I don't know.
Van Lunt in a flesh mask, of course.
Right. Yep. No, it could also be the Black Widow trying to figure out the source of Brother Brimstone's powers.
Yep. Or experimenting with costumes.
Yep. So
it is kind of fun that the Spider-Man issue and the Daredevil issue we read both featured the main character getting their ass whipped most of the time.
Yes.
And failing at normal civilian life, like pretty completely.
Both, yeah.
Yeah.
A failure professionally and personally.
Yeah, it's a double whammy.
What a role model.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Again, Stu, sorry we're leaving you on a cliffhanger.
It's okay.
But, you know, we'll get back to this at some point.
I'll find out if Brother Brimstone had a nice funeral. I don't know.
Okay, well, we got one more book left to talk about. It's a big one. It's a centennial issue. So let's take our last break of the episode, When we come back, we're going to talk about Fantastic Four, number 100, right here on Coffee Table Lounge. All right, everyone, we have one issue left to talk about this episode, and that is Fantastic Four number 100. It's called The Long Journey Home. It's written by Stan Lee. Well,
you read my mind.
Yeah.
That's putting it liberally.
Yeah, we'll just say it's by Stan Lee and Jack Kirby and not try to split that hair. And Joe Sinnott handles the inking. That's the one thing we can say for sure.
Mm-hmm. I do like that they're credited, Stan Lee and Jack Kirby, mm-hmm. at the height of their talents.
Yes.
Ooh, that's a dig.
Knowing that by now Jack has said, like, yeah, dude, I'm leaving.
Yeah. So I mean, for context, like, we have that we're like 3 months away from Kirby leaving Marvel, and he's headed to DC. He'll be doing his Fourth World stuff there starting next year. So at this point, he's either signed the contract or he's in the final stages of negotiating. Whether or not he's formally said anything to Marvel yet is a different story. But I mean, he knows he's not going to be around. So
yeah.
But at the same time, you know, this is the 100th issue of Fantastic Four.
You got to do something big.
You got to show up. It's the first Marvel comic to reach 100 issues. And of course, they celebrate it with multiple variant covers.
trading cards.
Chromium. Yeah, trading cards. Glow in the dark ink. Mm-hmm. Even a polybag version with gold ink in it. no, of course not. This is back in the days when Marvel scrambled every single month just to get one cover for each of their issues that they shipped. So, yeah.
It's like barely a full length issue.
Yeah, that's the thing. Yeah. I mean, they didn't even up the page count. It's a 20 page issue, just like issue 99 and issue 101. Mm-hmm. So. Rob, we talked about Fantastic Four number 99 with our friend Noah 2 weeks ago.
Oh, right. Yes.
He had some strong opinions about that one. At the start of the story, the FF are returning from the inhuman city of Adelan in a craft that they had borrowed from Black Bolt. Uh-huh. Can you refresh our memories as to why the FF was in Adelan?
Well, it's a little guy called Johnny Storm, who is a total asshole. He was upset that Crystal got teleported back to the Inhuman City. He's done several other things for a few months with the team. No real big mention, but suddenly he got very upset and needed to find her and possibly murder all of the Inhumans to show his love or whatever. Right, he is a psychopath too. Mm-hmm. So, that's what he was doing last issue. And the Fantastic Four were trying to stop him from, you know, murdering everyone.
Right, committing genocide.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Crystal's one of the Inhumans.
Yes. Yeah. And very powerful, and she's worked with the Fantastic Four for a while already now. So she's telling him it was really bad. So Johnny, I mean, the summary is Noah doesn't like Johnny Storm, and this was perfect to talk to Noah about that last issue because he had a lot to say.
Yep.
But and it was hilarious.
Yeah, apparently all is forgiven, even though he also tried to crisp up his teammates at a couple different points in the story.
He would have murdered them all.
Yeah.
So he would have murdered everyone because he's a hot-tempered kid in love.
Yep. With nuclear firepower.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so definitely some themes carrying on in Marvel these days.
Yeah.
Toxic masculinity.
Yeah.
But that goes away soon, right?
Oh, yeah.
By the time, like, 1974 rolls around, we're totally fine.
Yeah, then it becomes a medicinal masculinity.
Right, exactly. So this is the 100th issue. We got to have a gimmick. And the gimmick that Stan and Jack come up with is to cram as many Fantastic Four villains as possible from their first 99 issues into number 100. It's classic.
Let's get at them.
But there is a catch. The only actual villains in the story are the team of the Puppet Master and the Thinker, a.k.a. the Mad Thinker, who have worked together to craft robot duplicates of the FF's deadliest foes in the hopes of destroying them.
The foes that they are duplicating, they successfully killed the Fantastic Four, right?
Single one of them. Yeah. So these guys have never hatched a successful plan themselves.
Negative times a negative is positive.
Right.
Yeah.
There you go.
They're math rules. Yeah.
So Stu, you used to work at Games Workshop, I believe.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, you are a hardcore tabletop gamer. You've got your Warhammer figs behind you.
Yeah.
Nice case.
Where's this going?
Well, I was just going to say.
Is this just a bunch of compliments?
Just going to say.
It's going to turn. Hang on.
Yeah, wait for it.
Wait for it. Did you ever feel a sort of kinship with the puppet master?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, certainly, you know, I wasn't particularly. The thing is, I wasn't familiar with the puppet master before reading this issue.
Oh, okay.
But
oh,
wow. I immediately sensed a kinship with him. It's as if I'd known him my whole life.
Yeah. Like, it's eerie.
To be 100% represented on the page, like, that's not a common feeling.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And so, yeah, obviously I was rooting for him. I was hoping he was going to, sculpt more robots out of control clay?
Yep. Like that.
Nailed it. Radioactive control clay, yeah.
Yeah. And I would be kind of annoyed that my partner is always bugging me about stuff. But we'll see. Yeah. Well,
speaking of if your partner's bugging you, have you ever considered maybe painting a lead miniature of Elliot in the hopes of using it to make him let you get a word in edgewise every now and then?
Yes. I usually have, when we're done on the podcast, I usually look at a picture of Elliot on my phone and I just talk to it because he can't interrupt me.
Level out the. Yeah.
All right. Well, I feel like going through the issue, panel by panel, page by page, that's kind of silly. I mean, because it's a giant, glorious 20-page fight. Until the Puppet Master and Mad Thinker's Hulk robot flips out on them at the very end. And they accidentally blow up their own base trying to destroy the Robo-Hulk. I thought what we might do is take a tour through these FF antagonists. And, Stu, if you would mind rating them according to the Flap House's rating system.
Wow.
If they're good, bad villains, bad, bad villains, or villains you kind of like.
Okay.
So let's give it a shot. So we start out with our first one on page three is Kang the Conqueror, who shows up. Are you a Kang fan? How do you feel about the Conqueror?
I honestly don't know a ton about Kang. Uh-huh. I've learned a little because of Jonathan Majors' portrayal. I guess I'm intrigued.
Okay.
Yeah.
But certainly his appearance in this book is very minimal. I don't see very much. The angle of the panel where he shows up is really weird.
So
I'm gonna give Kang, at least within the confines of this story, a bad, bad rating.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah,
Puppet Master Robot Kang.
Yeah, He doesn't really do much, doesn't use any of his time powers or anything like that. So I think that's fair. Next one, perhaps a bit more well known, I would say the Fantastic Four villain. On page four, Dr. Doom shows up.
Mm-hmm.
How do we feel about Dr. Doom?
I mean, he's a villain I kind of like. I mean, I love the fact that Ben Grimm calls him Doc Doom, and he's like, oh, my actual title's Doctor.
Yeah.
I didn't go to all that school to have you disrespect me. Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, Doom is—he's the reason the Fantastic Four exist. Like
that, this comic survived.
Yeah,
for sure. And then pages five and six—the first time we see the Puppet Master and the Mad Thinker. also, the Puppet
again, what cool looking dudes! What a party over here!
Do you know the Mad Thinker's gimmick? Are you familiar with his whole thing? He's like a super planner. So
he has a computer as big as a house that helps him plan. Yeah.
To the second usually.
Right. Yeah. So he's a guy who's like, in exactly 3.8 seconds, they will walk through this door and that sort of thing.
I think it's an interesting choice to have the Puppet Master is the bald one and the Mad Thinker has the big crazy hair. Right?
Yes. Yep.
That feels like normally I would expect those to be swapped. But.
Yep.
Yeah, and for some reason, the Puppet Master is back to looking sort of like a bald howdy doody. But he had been inexplicably looking like an Uncle Fester clone for a while, and then now he's back.
It wasn't just the turtleneck either. He totally.
Yeah.
But he said he went through plastic surgery or something. So
yeah.
Now he reversed it. Botched.
He's good with clay,
Yeah.
Oh,
the processes are
maybe
similar.
He did it to himself.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep.
Now he's back to his weird arched eyebrows.
Yeah. And then on page 7, we get Century 459, Big Purple Robot.
Who could forget?
That's true.
Yeah.
Not a lot of context there, but yeah.
Yeah. And
he seems pretty tough, though. He hangs in for a little bit. What's this guy's deal?
It's like 2 pages, right? As a,
he's yeah. a, he's like, a Kree Century robot sent to Earth to help conquer Earth once the Kree got around to it, which they didn't. So right.
They have a lot going on, to be fair. They're busy.
Yeah, they left him behind like thousands of years ago, and he woke up when Captain Marvel came to Earth. So, yeah.
But yeah, he's pretty tough.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah, I'll give him a good bad rating.
There you go.
I didn't understand why Kang and Doom got hardly a panel, whereas Century got 2 full pages.
I assume because Jack wanted to draw the Century.
That makes sense.
Where is my head?
And there was he left no time for editing when he sent the pages in from California where he was at the time.
Yeah. So he couldn't mess with it.
He definitely did not want to draw Kang.
No.
Jeez. I think he invented Kang, but he didn't want to draw him.
Yeah.
Maybe that some of this might also be he's like rehashing all the things he made for Marvel, and the ones that were more popular, he drew less of.
Oh. Can you give him a little boost?
Yeah.
Just trying to read some subtext.
You can see that. Page 9, we get the appearance of Dragon Man. Who I know is one of Rob's favorite villains. Do you want to try to explain Dragon Man?
Dragon Man is an android who breathes fire. Mm. And until maybe this appearance did not speak.
See, I thought it was like the thinker or the puppet master speaking through him.
Oh, maybe that's... Oh. I mean, this is also not him. This is a robot of him. Yep. So... But yeah, until then.
So it's later, an android of an android?
Yeah. We're in 7 days.
They nailed it. Dragon Man also later becomes a friend of the Fantastic Four and helps run the Future Foundation.
Yeah, he wears little glasses low on his nose.
Yeah, like little reading glasses and talks to them. So he's a lovable guy later, but until now, he's just been sort of a android gargoyle that breathes fire and does weird things, but kind of is nice to the ladies.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to say that's a villain I kind of like.
Nice.
And then this is a character you may be more familiar with. On page 11, the Submariner shows up.
That's a character I kind of love. Yeah. Yeah. Man, he's so awesome. He's such an asshole.
Consistent asshole.
Yeah. I love the boldness of, you know, just showing up with little wings on your feet and a pair of briefs.
And he's like, I'm going to take your girl, sir.
Yeah. Subby's great. And they went and they built like android duplicates of his entire Atlantean army, too.
Yeah, so that seemed pretty far-fetched. This is where I started to go, this wasn't the story that he sent in, and he was asked to send in a few pages of the Mad Thinker to make this thing work with continuity.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, because there's like volcanoes and there's snow, but it's also the desert. Like this isn't like a comic book exactly. This was like a challenge, right?
This is like a fever dream.
Yeah.
It's like, have fun with us, Stan.
Right.
Yeah.
I love the image at the bottom of page 13 where the thing is running away from the Submariner's army. Like, it's just such a funny image of the thing.
It's Bender saying cheese it on Futurama. Yeah.
It's like he's going to bust through a wall and, I don't know, give all the kids popsicles or something.
Oh, yeah.
Our next villain shows up on page 14, and that's the Hate Monger. Stu, do you know who the Hate Monger's secret identity is? I'll give you a hint. His skull was displayed in Russia's...
Really?
Yes.
Really? Well, yep. I'm glad this dude sucks. Shield and what's that, an axe? What's going on here?
Yeah.
This guy sucks. Not a fan.
I think we could safely say bad on that one.
Yep.
Yeah. And then, Diablo. Super villainous alchemist with bad facial hair.
He doesn't even get like a full panel. Like he's just getting.
Nor should he.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But Super Skrull.
Yeah, he gets a panel.
Yep.
Yeah.
Super Skrull's cool. I like that guy.
Yeah. He's got bits and pieces of all the Fantastic Four powers.
Very compelling trading card.
Yep.
Uh-huh. He was a good character in, what is that, Marvel vs. Capcom 3?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Played a lot of Super Skrull.
Yep, mm-hmm. for sure. Then we get the Red Ghost and his Super Apes.
pause. Right.
I gotta say, wait for applause. Those Super Apes are awesome.
Yes. Yes.
They are great. I love, man, give me more of those guys.
The Red Ghost, not, I don't need as much, but the Super Apes, yeah.
Yes. Keep those guys.
For sure.
I like the little guy with the little machine gun, and then there's a wizard one. Oh, man, it rules. Thumbs up.
Then we get...
The Wingless Wizard.
Yeah, three members of the Frightful Four, the Wingless Wizard, Paste Pot Pete, and the Sandman.
Or Trapster, as he goes by in here.
Paste Pot Pete.
He will always be Paste Pot Pete.
Yeah.
Is this the same Sandman?
Yeah.
Yeah, in his dumb Kane
Marco
costume.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, it's...
He's had quite a life, this guy. Yeah.
They put him in a bad costume like 3 years ago, and then they made that costume purple, which is... didn't improve anything. So
is it purple in the comics or is it just in this?
It has been purple the last few appearances. Okay. So yeah,
mm-hmm.
I think they're trying to give him like a, you know, unified team color, but
I do love how, Crystal's strategy is just taking the parts off of one guy's costume and throwing in and the anti-gravity discs and just like hitting everybody with an anti-gravity disc and they fly away.
Yeah. It's pretty solid. She knows what she's doing. And then finally, our last villain, sort of, is the Hulk, who actually winds up saving the day, as he often does, accidentally.
They programmed the Hulk robot too much like the Hulk.
Yeah.
Too well. Yeah.
Which is funny, because in the first issue of the Avengers, Hulk is disguised as a robot in the circus.
That's right.
Meccano.
Yeah. Yep, Meccano, yeah. So that's what... It's all full circle. It's wheels, circles.
Yes.
We'll never understand the meta entanglement of these stories. That was intended.
Yeah, right, yeah, right.
So, you guys have read a lot of these Fantastic Fours, right? So
we've read 100 of them. Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So how does this, for you, does this feel like the 100th issue? Does it feel like a good summary of the 199 issues you'd read previously?
No. I mean, honestly, like, it's... It's fun. It's a stunt, you know. It feels like what it is, which is like, I mean, it's a deck of trading cards. It's you know, it's they're trying to do something special, but you know, I don't think Kirby's heart is in it anymore. Honestly, I don't.
And it doesn't feel like an event.
No, it's not Galactus and Silver Surfer arriving on Earth. You know, it's not, which happened a long time ago in this 100 issues. So yeah.
Yep. And by this point, I don't feel like Stan and Jack are anywhere near on the same page creatively. So, you know, comics is such a collaborative medium that when you've got two guys trying to make something and they're not really talking to each other, you know, the results are usually not that great. So,
yeah.
I guess also there isn't a ton of precedent for an event like this at this time.
Sure.
You know, like that by now, like we were joking around before, like all the covers and the Michigas.
Mm-hmm.
But at this point, they're like, what should 100 issue be a special thing? Or what do we do? Let's
it's
try
like
this.
2 months out and they're like, oh,
this is a big
one. We're
going
to hit a number that matters to people.
Right.
Yeah. Which I think we've done before on our show.
I think we're coming up on one of them and I'm just trying not to think about it.
Yeah, see? So then we'll just
real Stan.
We'll just do a rogues gallery of robots.
There you go. Done.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. And Stu, you were mentioning that you, before we started recording, that you have not read a ton of Fantastic Four.
No.
What did you think of this issue generally?
It was nice to, it was fun to see a lot of different villains. It did feel just kind of like a mishmash. It didn't really have much of a story, especially after the Avengers issue, which was very complicated.
Mm-hmm.
And the like super stylish Daredevil issue. This, you know, like Jack Kirby's great. I'll look at Jack Kirby art all day long. As I said, my first exposure to Marvel Comics was Eric Larson, who is clearly hugely influenced by Kirby.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, other than getting to see a couple of cool, it felt very old fashioned mainly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think Jamie, you mentioned earlier in the episode that you like, you thought that the Avengers issue looked very modern, but mm-hmm. this one, it's just seemed old.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it, I think Kirby kind of reinvents his style when he gets to DC, and he really just kind of blows out and mm-hmm. goes, you know, just wild and cosmic with it.
I think this is also part of him phoning it in and just sure. filling the pages.
Oh, like, my gosh. Yeah. And barely. He's not doing backgrounds. Like, he's famous for those super ornate things.
Yeah.
And, like,
there's no crazy computers in the background or yeah, machinery yeah. or, yeah.
Yep.
So he's just getting the work done, getting the check, and it's not, and we're reading it
yeah.
because that's what we said we'd do, and here we are. Yep.
Yeah. We've committed.
Well, talking of this issue and also of Eric Larson, there was a series that Marvel put out in the early 2000s, and I think it's called The World's Greatest Comics Magazine, or Comic Magazine? It's whatever is not the strapline on Fantastic Four. But okay. And I think it's a eight or 10 issue limited series that Larson plotted and wrote a lot of and drew some of, but he basically got a bunch of artists who were all huge devotees of Kirby. And they just did basically their best Stan and Jack riff. And it was just like really fun, you know, kind of revisiting these characters in this era. And it was, you know, a tribute to, I guess at that point would have been the Marvel's 40th anniversary or something mm-hmm. like that. So, yeah,
that sounds
so
cool,
man. This issue would have been better if Stan and Jack hadn't done it. If they had given it to the rest of the bullpen and been like, "Hey, you guys want to like ape our thing or yeah. do your own thing with our stuff? Like, have fun, you know, like have fun. Let's celebrate."
Yeah, and I think that's, you know, I think they're only like 10 years past the start of the Marvel Universe at this point. Mm. So it's like, I don't think it's sort of like the Beatles, right? Like, I mean, obviously it was huge and influential, but it hadn't sort of become what it would become.
Yeah,
in the consciousness. So
yeah, I guess
no
doing
longer
that
legend. It was just a thing they were doing for 10
right,
years.
Right,
yeah.
Right. Yeah. Had you tried to do that then, they were like, we're not doing
like,
your work
we did,
for you.
Like, all we did is not here. Fail so far.
Yeah, you know, like, right, right.
Come on.
Yep.
Good point.
Well, that's our comics for April 1970. Now the only thing left for us to do is a totally original segment that no other podcast does, which is a recommendation segment. We're going to recommend some things that we think our listeners might be interested in that are not Marvel comics from April 1970. I'm going to go ahead and lead off by mentioning that I just finished reading DC put out some little like paperback archive editions of the Bronze Age Swamp Thing comics. And you know, like all right thinking comics fans, I think that Alan Moore's run on Swamp Thing is among the best comics ever written. I had never actually read the pre-Alan Moore stuff until recently, and I really enjoyed it. Len Wein and Bernie Wrightson co-created the character. They did the first 10 issues together. Joe Orlando, who was an EC Comics veteran, was their editor on those issues. So they're like these classic, you know, morality tale horror comics, but they're like, you know, 1970s code approved. So nothing gets too wild or too out of hand. But Bernie Wrightson's artwork is just gorgeous. I know that's a bold position to take, but I'm going to stand behind it.
When I was in Toronto a few years ago, and Guillermo del Toro had given some of his personal collection of like stuff to the museum, and I got to go through this big museum exhibit that was all Guillermo del Toro stuff. It had like maquettes, it had props from movies, it had the prop from Phantom of the Paradise, it had Dracula's armor from the beginning of Bram Stoker's Dracula, all this cool shit. But the thing he also had was a bunch of original Bernie Wrightson Frankenstein pages.
Whoa.
And like, I'm standing there like looking around like, is anyone else seeing this?
That's amazing.
So it's crazy. It's amazing.
Yeah.
I was crying.
Yeah, seriously. No, I grew up in Vermont, and I was friendly with a couple of the folks who had, they were the artists on Swamp Thing during the Alan Moore run, and you know, Steve Bissett and Rick Veitch, and just like hearing them tell stories of Bernie Wrightson, and like they just, you know, what an influence he was. Like, I loved their stuff, and then it was years before I went back and saw the Bernie Wrightson stuff. And I think Frankenstein was my that was my gateway to his artwork, and it's just like, oh my god, just beautiful. So yeah, I'm totally looking forward to getting into Marvel's 1970s horror comics very soon on this show.
And Len Wein's going to show up all over the place.
Yeah. But I got to say, like, the first 10 issues of Swamp Thing have set a very high bar for those Marvel horror comics to clear. So,
well, we have Man-Thing. I mean, it's
same.
Yeah. So many things.
He's giant size.
That's my nickname, my code name, giant sized Man-Thing number one. So, I think you already recommended this.
I have not. I read ahead in your notes and okay, I have not recommended
sweet.
It.
Sweet. So. I beat you to a Lemire recommendation. So,
is that how you say his name?
That's how I say it.
Maybe.
All right.
That's, hey, Jeff, come on the show and correct us.
Yeah, come at me, Jeff.
Yeah, we dare you.
We have a lot of toxic masculinity. So
we've been reading a lot of Silver Age Marvel comics.
Yeah. Everything's got to go somewhere, and it's going in our brains.
So Brian did not recommend this, but he recommended it to me, and I took a picture of it on his bookshelf, and that's how I eventually got it. But Sentient by Jeff Lemire and Gabriel Walta is it's like a perfect sci-fi horror story. It's like Alien with a little bit of the new sort of version of Lost in Space, if you've seen that on Netflix. It's a colony ship in deep space and out of communication range, and it's attacked, it's attacked by an internal secret separatist on board. And I'm only telling you what's like on the book jacket. So okay. So it happens quickly. This person kills all the adults, and the children are left to survive with the help of a malfunctioning AI.
Oh, interesting.
And it's so good. It was it just this super rich story, really perfectly executed with there's some shocking, gory moments and things, but it feels like horror sci-fi. Mm-hmm. So the collection of 1-6 came out last year, and I'm just waiting for the next collection, because you know I can't get myself to do monthlies anymore. I'm like, I just don't want to do the. I've got so many boxes.
Yeah,
so many boxes.
Yeah,
you know the candy coated version of what you're talking about is there's a new Star Trek show for kids called Star Trek Prodigy.
Oh, okay.
Heard about this?
No.
It's a similar premise. A bunch of kids end up finding and inheriting a starship and are cruising around the universe. And Janeway, the like AI holodeck version of Janeway, is like helping them out, maybe steering them towards something, maybe not.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah. I wonder if we're about to get a bunch of stories like that. Like if it's zeitgeisty, like comets hitting Earth or something.
Oh, yeah. Cool, cool. Jamie, you got something to recommend this week?
Yeah,
Prodigy. No,
I just did.
Damn. I fell into a podcast which made me revisit what I used to think was a guilty pleasure, but now I find is like very rich in academic and interesting thoughts.
I know you're on it almost every week.
Oh, zing!
That's ours.
Yeah. Wait,
surprise!
I am a huge fan of the late 80s, early 90s Excalibur, like the Marvel Excalibur run.
Yeah.
I was the only kid who I felt like had ever heard it. I felt like no one ever talked about it. Like it felt like something that was very personal to me that I liked and could not justify to anybody else.
Well, you found your people.
I found, yeah, guys. Yeah. And then there's
Brian Braddock. Come on.
The whole crew.
Lockheed, man. Lockheed rules.
Oh, yeah.
Man, in one of those early issues, it looks like he gets murdered, and the trauma of that moment stuck with me for years. Like,
yeah.
It's just great. And it's super rich with like interesting thoughts on sexuality and trauma and like, you know, crazy group dynamics. And yeah, it's a lot more rich than I thought as a child.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, highly, highly recommend that run. I've been like revisiting it, and it's just a joy.
That's, you know, the Hines brothers who do the Screw It, We're Just Going to Talk About Comics podcast. They're doing, they're going back and reading the Claremont X-Men right now because they never read it when they were kids. They read everything else Marvel around that time.
Huh.
But they just didn't read the Claremont X-Men.
Right, right.
But one of them did read Excalibur.
Oh, whoa.
And they're like, Excalibur is one of my favorite books, but X-Men? No, thank you.
I mean, that wasn't exactly where I was, but I hadn't read the Claremont stuff either when I was reading that. So it was all,
Yeah. Stu, do you have something that you would recommend? It doesn't have to be a comic, but...
I don't know if this has been recommended, but a little while ago, I tracked down some hard-to-find Grendel's Tales comics, which they have... I found some omnibuses. It's the spinoff from the Matt Wagner Grendel books.
Mm-hmm.
And it was where they kind of tossed the ball to other creators. And particularly, I want to recommend a pair of stories by Darko McCann and Eddie Bajukovic, who is unfortunately no longer with us. Mm-hmm. And they are they're Eastern European comics creators who pitched a sci-fi story basically about feuding Eastern European tribes. And it's like dark and sad and like, oh, it's such a good book. And the art is incredible. Bajukovic is such a talent that was, he only got to do a few books before he passed away. He did some Star Wars books too. And they're definitely worth your time if, kind of dark war stories, appeal to you. They're great. I don't think I even listed the name of the books, but the stories are Devils and Deaths and Devil's Choices. But nice. If you can try, they're spread out between the two volumes of the Grendel's Tales omnibuses, but mm-hmm. it's worth it.
Awesome. We were just talking about that, right?
Last week. We were talking about the expanding Grendelverse after Wagner sort of let it go, and this is part of it.
Worth checking out.
The Grendel as a whole is just a fascinating series where from where that series started to where it wound up, like in year 10 it looks nothing like it did in year 1. Like he just goes off on these wild future stories. And
it's what I want a character to do in any context, which can never happen in a Marvel or DC containment field.
Right
Just like grow and do like it insane difference in progression and evolution.
Yeah
I feel like it benefits from being like a creator eventually getting a little bit tired with an aspect of his creation and just getting it being like, no, we're gonna turn this into a super amazing epic like post-apocalyptic sci-fi story.
It worked.
Yeah
It's been working for like 25 or 30 years now.
Oh, wow.
Good for him.
I got to catch up on it now.
Yeah. Well, Stu, thank you so much for joining us. This has been a blast. We have been looking forward to this for a long time. You absolutely did not disappoint. What can we plug for you? Let's mention the podcast and mention the bars again.
Yeah. Well, thanks so much for having me. This was a blast, guys. I haven't been doing a lot of guest spots on podcasts, so this was a nice easy transition. Thank you. The Flophouse podcast, please check that out. My wife has a podcast that I am occasionally on, and I do almost all the producing for. It's called I Know the Owner, where she talks to other bar owners and longtime bartenders just kind of about the business. And I am a not infrequent guest. Please visit either of our two bars, Hinterlands Bar or Minnie's Bar in Brooklyn.
Sweet.
Nice.
We'll definitely be stopping by next time we're in town.
I want to go there.
Yeah.
We were very close to going to New York, at least Brian and I, in August, and then shit got weird.
And then
again.
The world fell apart again. So keeps doing that. I hope it stops doing that. That's it for this episode. Thanks so much for listening. Please subscribe to our Patreon for the fantastic price of $4 a month. Patreon.com/MarvelByTheMonth. You get exclusive content like a longer version of this episode. Review us on Apple Podcasts or whatever you use to listen to us. And if you'd like some free stuff in the mail, please send us a screenshot of your 5-star review to marvelbythemonth@gmail.com. Instagram's our main social channel. You can find us there at Marvel by the Month, and marvelbythemonth.com has links to our other social channels as well as our shop. That's it for this episode. My name's Brian Stratton.
Mine is Rob Milne.
I'm Jamie Wenger.
And we hope you will stay safe, stay healthy, and stay inside and read comics.
Crack the next beer during the talking.
What a, you're infringing on copyright now.
That's true.
I'll allow it.
Thank you.